in
we just have 15 seconds.
Yeah, you know, the dangers are tremendous that this will be hijacked by some terrorist groups. And so one more reason why Europe shouldn't continue with this neglect for a conflict that needs to be sorted out according to the UN rule and international law and, of course, human rights.
We're going to have to leave it there. Ana Gomes, retired Portuguese diplomat, former Portuguese ambassador to Indonesia and former member of the European Parliament, and Francesco Battagli, former UN special representative in Western Sahara. That does it for our show. Go to democracynow.org for our documentaries on East Timor and Western Sahara. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
KABU Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. KABU's Community Advisory Board will meet Thursday, December 22nd from 6 to 8 p.m. The meeting will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland and online through a public video conference. At this time, masks are required for in-person attendees.
Prison Pipeline is a radio program dedicated to educating the public about the Oregon criminal justice system. Topics include incarceration and reentry, addictions and mental health, elections and laws, victims' rights, and criminal justice reform. The program presents a unique understanding of the criminal justice system, addresses the root causes of crime, and challenges the status quo. It seeks to promote awareness and activism in order to foster a safer, healthier, and more just society.
Prison Pipeline airs on Monday evenings from 6:30 to 7 p.m. on KBOO Portland. Check us out every week. If you miss an episode, you can stream it later. Just go to kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. More info about upcoming shows and events related to the prison community can be found on our Facebook page, Prison Pipeline. Be sure to like us.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KABU Evening News.
Coming up on this end-of-year fund drive edition of the KABU Evening News, the January 6th committee refers Trump to the Justice Department for criminal charges, advocates rally in Beaverton in solidarity with Iran, and a coalition works together to preserve California's old-growth sequoias. Good evening. This is the KABU Evening News for Monday, December 19th, 2022. KABU is currently in our end-of-year fundraising drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Michelle Coppola. In its final meeting today, the January 6th committee in the U.S. House voted unanimously on criminal referrals to send to the U.S. Department of Justice. That includes former President Donald Trump and his lawyer, John Eastman. The committee says Trump broke four criminal statutes: obstructing a criminal proceeding, making false statements, defrauding the United States, and inciting an insurrection. Representative Jamie Raskin of Maryland announced the criminal referrals. Here are some of his remarks.
We propose to the committee advancing referrals where the gravity of the specific offense, the severity of its actual harm, and the centrality of the offender to the overall design of the unlawful scheme to overthrow the election compel us to speak. Ours is not a system of justice where foot soldiers go to jail and the masterminds and ringleaders get a free pass.
That was Representative Jamie Raskin of Maryland speaking at the House January 6th committee about the criminal referrals for former President Donald Trump. The panel also referred four congressional Republicans to the House Ethics Committee for ignoring subpoenas from the January 6th committee. They are House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, Representative Jim Jordan from Ohio, Representative Andy Biggs of Arizona, and Scott Perry from Pennsylvania. The panel says the full details of the report will be released to the public later this week. So what does a criminal referral mean for Trump, Eastman, and others? The referral is a recommendation to the Justice Department that they should prosecute the people that the committee believes have committed crimes. It isn't binding, but it is symbolic. The publicity of the committee's hearings impacted public perception, and the referral adds pressure on the DOJ to act. Jack Smith is the Justice Department's special counsel for investigations into Trump, so prosecution of Trump for the four crimes listed by the committee will be up to him. According to the Human Rights Activist News Agency, at least 500 people have been killed in Iran since protests there began in mid-September. So far, there have also been two public executions, and human rights groups say that about 12 other protesters have been sentenced to death. Protests began following the death of Mahsa Amini, a 22-year-old aspiring lawyer who died in the custody of Iran's morality police for allegedly wearing her hijab incorrectly. The dead included 69 children, and more than 18,000 other people have been arrested. Solidarity protests are spreading all across the world in support of freedom for Iran. This weekend, KBOO's Isabelle Charlet attended a rally in Beaverton organized by the group Free Iran PDX, who have been gathering every week under the banner Women, Life, and Freedom.
Free Iran PDX has been gathering every Sunday since the deadly protests began in September. Protesters stood on the sidewalks holding signs and waving flags in the cold rain while supporters honked. I spoke with several people, all with family back in Iran, about what their experience has been like the last few months and what they hope to see happen there.
I am outraged, sickened. I don't even have the adjectives for it of how I feel about what's been happening over the last 3 months in Iran. Every day it's another atrocity, whether it is the reporting of rapes of women in prison, children being murdered in the streets, the executions that have started.
So I don't sleep. And every morning when I wake up, I just follow the news and just ask my parents how have they been. And yeah, it's been really tough weeks for us, and we're just counting the days and hopeful to just something good happens in our country.
There's huge internet shutdown, so it's really hard to communicate. For a long, long time, I could not even talk to my family unless on direct phone lines, so like no FaceTime and no video calls. But now we can talk, but it's like really hard to hear them. It's like, yeah.
Your connection with Iran?
So I'm the only one from my family that is outside of Iran. So like 90% of people that I know are inside Iran. I have difficulties having contact and having communication with them, which it makes me more motivated to come here and be their voice because of the internet issues that they block the internet for normal people. So we need to be their voice.
We cannot wait to see freedom in Iran. We are so sad to see that, you know, it's not freedom for them. They kill the people, they torture, they rape, everything. It's so sad right now, the situation in our country.
What has it been like? What has it been like for you these past few months watching what's happened?
No life, not for me. My daughter lost 10 pounds. She's crying. Either she is here for the ever, but she's crying. My son was born here. We don't have a life right now until we see the freedom in our country. No.
We don't want to, you know, government talk about the of brave people, and they just say, we are standing with you guys. We are sick of hearing this stuff. Do action. We don't need this words. We don't need the speech. We don't need anything. We need action. Because of, this is about the human. This is about the, all of the women in the world. It's just not the woman in Iran.
I miss to be there. I'm here for the last 33 years. I cannot go over there because I was in every protest. That's why my family, we cannot back over there to see our family until the country back to real people. They are not human. They are not human, just I can say.
young people are willing to risk everything so that they can have a good future. And so I think because the government sees that people literally, as they chant in the streets, we will kill, we will die, we will get Iran back, they're not lying, and the government knows that.
At some point in history, this change needs to happen, and I feel proud to be a woman. And seeing women standing up, asking for what they deserve.
That was KBOO's Isabel Chalet speaking with Leila Oranshad, Sonia, Marianne Dorabi, Yassi, and one participant who wished to remain anonymous. More news involving Iran, where Iranian authorities arrested a renowned actress on charges of spreading falsehoods about recent countrywide protests. On Saturday, Taraneh Al-Dusti, star of the Oscar-winning movie The Salesman, was detained 1 week after she posted on Instagram expressing solidarity with the first man who was recently executed for crimes allegedly committed during the protests. This is the latest in a series of celebrity arrests, including soccer players, actors, and influencers. Persons felt to have openly expressed support for anti-government demonstrations now in their fourth month. In her post, the actress said, quote, "His name was Mohsen Shehkari. Every international organization who is watching this bloodshed and not taking action is a disgrace to humanity," end quote. Al-Dusti was arrested because she allegedly did not provide documents supporting her claims. Al-Dusti openly expressed solidarity with protesters since September. She's posted at least 3 times on Instagram. Her account, which had about 8 million followers, has now been suspended. Both Shehkari and a second prisoner were executed less than a month after they were charged, demonstrating how quickly Iran now carries out death sentences imposed for crimes related to the demonstrations. Activists say at least a dozen people have been sentenced to death in closed-door hearings. Al-Dusti previously criticized the Iranian government and its police force even before the protests. In June of 2020, she was given a suspended 5-month prison sentence after she criticized the police on Twitter for assaulting a woman who had removed her headscarf. She posted a picture of herself on Instagram without the mandatory hijab. At least 495 people have been killed in demonstrations since they began, and over 18,200 people have been detained by Iranian authorities. You're listening to an end-of-year fun drive edition of the KBOO Evening News. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for Coast Rage Radio. They'll be covering the Tribal Marine Stewards Network, an alliance of tribal nations working collaboratively to reclaim their right to protect and restore coastal and marine ecosystems in California. At 6 p.m., it's Labor Radio. Then at 6:30, Prison Pipeline. At 7 p.m., let's talk about race. Tonight's weather, it's going to be cloudy with some light rain and an overnight low of 35. Tomorrow, you can expect rain in our metro area with a high of 46. Today in history, in 2013, the spacecraft Gaia is launched by the European Space Agency. It's expected to operate until 2025 and works to construct the largest and most precise 3D space catalog ever made. The quote of the day is from American children's author Eve Bunting, who was born on this day in 1928. She said, quote, "It is easier to look the other way, but if you do, terrible things can happen." Senator Joe Manchin says he won't be leaving the Democratic Party like his colleague Kyrsten Sinema, and a call for Congress to fund the National Labor Relations Board. With those stories and more, it's Catherine Carley with 2022 Talks. You're up.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
Good old days, okay? I don't know what happened to the good old days, but I can tell you they're not here now.
Senator Joe Manchin has long lamented Washington partisanship, but he's going to remain a Democrat. Fellow party dissident Arizona Senator Kyrsten Sinema has become an independent. However, the West Virginian has again refuted rumors that he's leaving the Democratic Party. Representative Ro Khanna of California says Congress needs to protect the rights of American workers by better funding the National Labor Relations Board.
All the folks are out there standing with the wonderful Starbucks organizers, the Amazon organizers. They won't succeed if the NLRB isn't funded.
Khanna says $300 million more so the NLRB can work through a backlog of labor rights cases is crumbs compared to the almost $1 trillion defense authorization bill. Nazanin Ash of the nonprofit Welcome.us says tens of thousands of Afghans brought to the U.S. last year deserve a permanent home.
Refugees have an extraordinary history of success here in the United States. Most, 90%, who participate in job placement programs are self-sufficient within 6 months.
U.S. military leaders are also urging passage of the Afghan Adjustment Act. They say the U.S. has a moral obligation to protect its Afghan allies from the persecution they would face if deported back to Afghanistan. Supporters say they're optimistic about a bipartisan bill to cut the gap in sentences for possession of crack and powdered cocaine. Senator Cory Booker of New Jersey says the Equal Act would make the criminal justice system more racially fair.
We will not let this fall to the grind of bureaucratic politics. We will not let this end because this is an issue of justice.
The new sentencing guidelines would apply retroactively to those already convicted. Crack has the same effects as powdered cocaine, but carries much harsher sentences and has been more common in communities of color. Jury selection begins today in the trial of five members of the Proud Boys, charged with seditious conspiracy in connection with the January 6th attack on the Capitol. Finally, White House Coronavirus Response Coordinator Ashish Jha says Americans should still celebrate the holidays together, despite a 30% increase in COVID-19 cases in the U.S. since Thanksgiving. Jha recommends people who haven't gotten a COVID-19 shot in the last 6 months should get the newest booster. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
The price of crude oil has plummeted to its lowest since December of 2021, but big oil companies have kept gas prices artificially high for consumers. An analysis from Accountable.us shows oil companies charged consumers 8% more over the same period. Eric Galatis has the details.
After the price of crude oil plummeted to $75 a barrel, the lowest price since December of last year, big oil companies kept consumer gas prices artificially high, according to new analysis by Accountable.us. Chris Marshall is the group's research manager. He says instead of passing cost savings down to consumers who have been paying high prices for months, big oil has continued to line the pockets of its wealthy shareholders and executives.
While prices at the pump have been hurting American families, oil and gas companies are making record-shattering profits. Just in the first three quarters, 24 companies made $343 billion.
Marshall notes that's a 126% increase in profits over the same time period last year. In testimony before Congress, oil and gas executives said they are increasing energy output, which should ease demand. Some CEOs put the blame for the sluggish pace of lowering prices at the pump on local retailers that the oil companies do not own or control. After the price of spot crude dropped by 38% compared with the peak price set in June, the average price of gasoline actually went up by 8% from $3.28 a gallon to $3.54 a gallon. Marshall says he hopes to see political leaders make consumers whole by following Great Britain's lead. It recently imposed a windfall profits tax on oil and gas companies.
An important piece of that is accountability for the oil and gas industry, and I think a windfall profits tax would be badly needed if we hope to stop the blatant price gouging of American consumers from the biggest oil and gas companies.
Marshall says in addition to monitoring the price of crude and retail gas prices, his group also monitors SEC-mandated earnings calls of top oil and gas companies. He says across the board, CEOs have been boasting about record profits linked to high gas prices, and investors continue to push for distributions. In the first 9 months of this year, 21 oil and gas companies gave more than $107 billion to shareholders through dividend payouts and stock buybacks. This is Eric Galatis reporting for the Wyoming News Service.
This holiday season, it's important for folks to not ignore or minimize signs and symptoms of a heart attack. A study in an American Heart Association journal shows December 25th is the day the most fatal heart attacks occur in the United States. That's followed by December 26th. Deborah Van Fleet has more on the trend in Missouri.
The American Heart Association is drawing attention this holiday season to a startling study conclusion that more people have fatal heart attacks on December 25th, followed by the 26th and January 1st, than any other time of the year. The study in the Heart Association journal Circulation points to disruptions in people's routines and the added stress the holidays can bring as possible contributing factors. Dr. Peter Penegas with Washington University School of Medicine in St. Louis says regarding holiday stress, it can be a matter of degree.
We know that chronic stress is a risk factor for increased cardiovascular disease over time, and certainly increased stress, you know, sudden increases of stress hormones in the blood can lead to a high blood pressure, and they can trigger cardiac events if you're predisposed for them to begin with.
The AHA encourages folks to try to manage their stress, eat and drink in moderation, continue healthy exercise and sleep habits, and take their prescribed medications, especially blood pressure meds. And it stresses the importance of responding quickly to warning signs by calling 911. Penegas says chest pain is the most common, but jaw or arm pain, shortness of breath, and unexplained sweating, nausea, or vomiting should also not be ignored. Penegas cautions people against prioritizing holiday gatherings over seeking care if they're experiencing concerning symptoms. He says don't hesitate to seek hospital emergency care because of news reports about emergency departments being overwhelmed with cases of flu, COVID, and RSV.
There are certain conditions such as heart attack and stroke and major trauma that if you arrive to the emergency department, no matter how busy we are going to prioritize those symptoms and complaints. And if you need quick and efficient, timely medical care, you're going to get that no matter how busy we are.
Penegas points out that an ambulance is the recommended means of transportation to the emergency department.
Our paramedics and EMTs are extremely well trained for recognizing signs and symptoms of heart attack and stroke. And often they will call ahead and give us some advance warning so we can be prepared when someone arrives who may be having a heart attack.
He adds minutes can make a crucial difference in these cases and says people who arrive by ambulance often receive care more quickly than those who arrive at a hospital by car and go to the main entrance. For Missouri News Service, I'm Deborah Van Fleet.
A third edition of the Lakota Dictionary is launched with 20,000 more entries than the previous version. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Lakota Language Consortium is debuting the third edition of its new Lakota Dictionary. The third edition contains 20,000 more entries than its predecessor. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Lee Strubinger reports.
The previous Lakota Dictionary was published over a decade ago. Alex Fire Thunder is Oglala Lakota and the deputy director of the Lakota Language Consortium. He says Lakota is a living language and constantly evolves.
We'll continue to develop new words for things that, you know, that we have in our life. There's a word for cell phone. There's a word for computer. There's a word for car. A lot of words that we consider old words were new words at one time. You know, a word for wagon, clocks. Like, those are all, you know, pretty old words that were coined by our ancestors.
The language of the Ocheti Chacoan is an oral language, meaning it was never written down until the 1800s. Fire Thunder says other words and phrases had been around for generations and are only now being documented.
I found this word in an old rabbit dance song that says imachuka, and that's conjugated to the first person, so the third person would be ichuka. It means to have a taking or a liking for somebody, so, and it was in an old love song.
Many children fluent in Lakota, Dakota, and Nakota were chided for speaking their language during the boarding school era. Most fluent speakers are now elders. Fire Thunder says he wants to see the dictionary get put to good use.
My hope is that these words leave these pages. These words are here for everybody to access, but my hope is that they use them. Use them and speak them. Speak the life into them.
The Lakota Language Consortium is also announcing new changes to its language app, which they hope will entice the younger generation to communicate with elders. For National Native News, I'm Lee Schrubinger in Rapid City.
Tribes across Arizona are using indigenous knowledge and Western thought to address climate issues. Alex Gonzalez has more.
From droughts now synonymous with the Southwest to flash floods, landscapes are changing. Keith Howard, a wildlife technician with the Navajo Nation's climate change program, says building trust within the community is essential for the program's efforts to succeed.
Finding a way to reach the people and communicate with them in respect to our traditional way of learning and our traditional ways of understanding how the world works is one of the biggest obstacles.
Howard says language barriers make it difficult to translate some climate-related concepts into indigenous languages, which can be especially challenging for community elders. Despite the difficulties, Howard says progress is being made. According to an international assessment of climate change released last year, indigenous communities are among the most susceptible to the effects of a warming climate. Howard points out that most tribal communities depend on a healthy environment for survival. He adds lack of infrastructure on the Navajo Nation, compounded with the effects they're already seeing, have made it more difficult to adapt.
One of our struggles is finding resources, funding opportunities to address some of these issues to help mitigate the effects of climate change.
Howard says that includes money for restoration projects to replace native vegetation and keep streams flowing. In the meantime, he says the Navajo Nation does its best to address climate-related issues and help the community adapt to the rate of change.
That was Alex Gonzalez reporting. New Mexico's Public Education Department has announced a new tutoring program that expands free tutoring for math, reading, and science. It focuses on pre-K to 8th grade for Title I schools and tribally controlled schools. It's being offered virtually before, after, and during school. Families can sign their children up for 20 hours of tutoring. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
More than 10,000 sequoia trees have died between 2020 and 2021 due to megafires and insect infestations made worse by climate change. But the California Giant Sequoia Land Coalition has come together to respond to make sequoia groves more resilient. Suzanne Potter has more.
California's old-growth sequoia trees are dying at an alarming rate, so land managers across the Sierras are mounting an emergency response. Many of the biggest, oldest trees on Earth have fallen victim to megafires, bark beetle infestation, and drought, all exacerbated by climate change. Jessica Morse with the California Natural Resources Agency says multi-tree die-offs are rare among sequoias, with only about 24 lost between the Ice Age and 2015. But now, more than 10,000 old-growth trees have died since 2020.
Yeah, I mean, I think this has been an all-hands-on-deck moment where we have state, federal, local, tribal, and nonprofit partners coming together to really address the sequoia crisis with urgency. You know, we've lost nearly 20% of the monarch sequoias in just 2 years.
This year, the California Giant Sequoia Land Coalition has cleared dead wood and burned piles for more than 4,200 acres, with about another 22,000 acres to go. Sequoia groves range from Lake Tahoe down to Sequoia National Park. Teresa Benson is forest supervisor of the Sequoia National Forest and Giant Sequoia National Monument. She says the work will ensure that groves can be more resilient to fire in the future.
That work on the ground will result in fires actually having a more beneficial effect versus the high severity fire effects that we've seen from these massive fire events that have been occurring in California.
Clay Jordan is superintendent at Sequoia and Kings Canyon National Parks. He says the coalition is working with UC Berkeley and others to measure the effects of fire to inform the work going forward.
We are conducting research and then sharing that information among all the land stewards so that we can make science-driven decisions to protect the resource.
The coalition has already started planting 200,000 seedlings, including 25,000 baby giant sequoia, which will grow into the monarch trees of the next century. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
You're listening to an end-of-year fun drive edition of the KBOO Evening News for Monday, December 19th, 2022. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem and Isabel Chalet. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Catherine Carley, Suzanne Potter, Deborah Van Fleet, and Eric Galatas. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Michelle Coppola. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. KBOO is currently in our end-of-year fund drive, so now is a great time to get involved. Hey, what a wonderful stocking stuffer, huh? If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Coast Range Radio. Have a wonderful night.
Welcome to Coast Range Radio, a production of the Coast Range Association. I'm your host, Michael Gasco. On today's show, we're heading south to California to learn about the groundbreaking Tribal Marine Stewards Network. The Tribal Marine Stewards Network, or TMSN, is an alliance of tribal nations working collaboratively to reclaim their right to protect and restore coastal and marine ecosystems in California. Now, government agencies have historically been either resistant or outright hostile to tribal co-management and sovereignty. You can just Google Northwest Fishing Wars for just one modern example. So I was really excited to see the state of California changing course and supporting a